Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good evening and welcome along to the trium. should be the forum, but there's no sign of the fourth member at this moment in time. Tonight in the forum, there's myself, Phil, I'm hosting. Beside me over this side is Keith. Say hello, Keith.
Hello, Keith.
And now below me is P, right? And Shane is somewhere in the internet space of...
It's like Willy Wonka when Mike TV gets transported from the machine and he gets... put into a load of million different pieces and goes across. Shane is somewhere between here and there.
It's exactly like that, actually. Like that.
It's exactly like that. So we're in Willy Wonka's chocolate lab at this stage. Right, tonight in the forum, you know the script. We talk about stuff that happens in the world of football, primarily the Liverpool world, but given that there's not much really going on at the moment outside of Adrian score, getting a new contract and everyone having a shit fit about it, who aren't humans, there hasn't much else been going on. So what we're going to do tonight, we're going to pass it over to the question around international football. I know Shane's topic was to do with the media coverage, particularly in light of the Christian Eriksen incident. Pete, you want to talk about how shit football is in the international sphere. Keith, you're going to cover off the Copa and why we should be watching the Copa and not the European Championships at the moment. And finally, I want to hand it over to the lads in the comments to give me the fourth topic. This is where the Euros come from. It's Euro topic, right? So it's you guys pick my topic for me. The best topics that come in across the course of the night, I'll pick one of them and we'll debate that as the last topic. Before we get started, I just want to remind you all about Siena Steps. It's very important that you get on there and contribute. Do your 5Ks, do whatever you need to do. Just buy a ticket. Don't do anything. Sit in your hole. Sit in your hole for 5K if you want to. Count 5K in your sofa. And I don't really mind. Just whatever you do, just donate. Buy some gear on the website as well. If you don't want to walk anywhere, there's T-shirts, there's hats, there's coasters, there's cups. There's aprons, there's hats. I said hats. It's like the generation game.
Loads hats.
Teddy bears. There's a teddy bear. There might be a range of chocolate soon, but all in a good aid. So please get on there and support if you can. Every euro and pound and dollar and yen will be gratefully welcome. So look, with that, I want to move it along. As I said, the first topic is I'm going to hand it off to Pete, right? Because Pete was, we discussed taking the knee last week. Pete himself had a new view on the and a different take, and also wants to bring his own experiences to it, which I think is fair, which is really important for people out there to understand and believe what's going on. And here's Shane.
There's
my TV. We managed to get Shane in, the fourth member of a forum, so I managed to delay the intro long enough to get you in time, so that's great. Fair play to you.
It was on Joe's internet.
I bet you are on Joe's. You're on Joe's gaff at the moment, but we won't say anything about that. He'll come back off duty. But it's great to see you wearing your Newtown Rangers tracksuit as well. But you're having a patch there on the Iron Mike. What was it? The Junkyard Dog. That's what you look like tonight, Pete. You look like the Junkyard Dog. All you have to do short of is a chain around your neck.
It's 25 degrees here, boys. I'm sweltering.
It's 27 here in Ireland. I'm going to try my hoodie on. Anyway, right. So just for sponsorship. Right. Where do we go? We go with you, Pete. Come on. The knee, right wingers, everything.
Yeah, very similar. I chose international football and the lack of quality tonight, to be honest, to highlight the fact that this tournament and other tournaments going forward, it looks like they're going to be hijacked, to be honest with you, by the right wing and some of their agenda. And I wanted to really following on from what you guys talked about in and around taking the knee last week. It's very important, I suppose, that the likes of myself, Grays, Avi, people... You know, black people, Muslim people, people with a, I'm not saying everyone doesn't have a view, but people with first-hand experience and a view should really kind of put some of these issues to bed. So on behalf of them, I kind of wanted to talk about this and apologize pre-rant to all the guys that we engage with, but it's very important to talk about this. Now, in and around taking the knee, if you look at what happened in and around the England game and the preamble to it, you'll see that the right wing, probably extremists, we can call them at this stage, have equated taking the knee to adopting and adapting to Marxist views. Now, there are two essential problems with that, Phil, as you well know. The first problem I would have personally is that no right wingers out there, and I include David Logie in this, the self-appointed spokesman who's been given a platform by Sky and the BBC, and none of these right wing idiots are familiar, first of all, with the core principles of Marxism. Essentially, it's the Marxism is the... Now, I'm not advocating Marxism, but I'm going to tell you what it is. It's essentially the rejection of a monopoly of rich or large business owners who would use those means at their disposal as a weapon to subvert and dominate the masses, i.e. the proletariat, as it would have been called in some parts of the world. Now, that might ring some bells. The same idiots who claim to be protecting football and protecting people against those ideas will be actually advocating for those ideas, to be honest with you, come next Monday when it's time to go back to work. And seeing from that very hymn sheet, to be honest with you, the truth is that people like David Logie, Phil, and guys have been allowed a platform and have been given a huge platform to preach their false equivalency claim by the UK's largest sports broadcasters, which, to be honest with you, personally, I can't believe it. I can't even begin to tell you how disappointing that is, that Sky, the BBC, would allow these people have any kind of platform at all. I mean, look, let me be honest with you. Black Lives Matter and the various equality movements throughout the course of history, like, for example, I don't know, the Black Panthers, and any black Muslim movement, you know, led by the likes of Malcolm X, have always kind of equated their values to those essential Marxist values. But the problem is, and it's not the first time this has happened in history, right-wing organizations have always used the excuse of Marxism, communism to kind of sell this false equivalency story and agenda to subvert what is a very, very powerful black, Muslim, or whatever nation, to be quite honest with you. And I can't believe for one that the British public and the public that we're exposed to is allowing itself to even entertain that. And I'm kind of surprised, to be honest, that the BBC or that Sky or any of these broadcasters would even give a platform to the likes of David Logie. David Logie went on, who was is supposed to be the fan spokesperson. That's a very, very dangerous spokesperson, by the way, to a point. But I'm very, very surprised that the broadcaster itself hasn't read it, any history books, hasn't decided to look at the history of right-wing establishment using Marxism as an excuse, and a weak excuse at that, to allow these people to tell you that taking a knee, which is a symbolic gesture, it's not a political movement, it's a symbolic gesture against racism and racist values. I cannot believe that they are allowing a platform to people like Logie to say, oh, the communication needs to be clearer. Now, it couldn't be any clearer. You know, Black people are making a stand against racism. They're doing it in a public forum. That's all the communication you need. So for me, to be honest with you, there's no argument here. It's just stand back, be quiet, and allow people to protest peacefully in the way that they've chosen over the last 6 or 7 months. And to be honest with you, the reason I wanted to have this conversation is, and I wanted to urge people out there, don't be fooled by racist commentary. And the racist commentary is simple. Oh, that's, if you subscribe to taking the knee, you're subscribing to changing the course of our political journey towards Marxism. That's absolute rubbish. And it's an attempt to muddy the waters with a non-related political agenda, to be honest, that has nothing to do with safeguarding against racism.
Keith,
yeah, couldn't agree more. Very well said, P. Very well put. And I think, you know, Marxism, it's an easy word to throw out there to frighten people because nobody really knows what it is. Do you know what I mean? It's communism. Who are the top Marxists in the world are? Like Stalin and Ho Chi Minh and Mao and all these guys. And they all had their chance running their countries. And it died away. So why people think Marxism is making a comeback? If anything, there's been in the last maybe 10 years, maybe more, there's been a rise in right-wing politics and things like that cropping up in England, in Europe, in America, all over the world. The right-wing has sort of come out of its cave nearly, for want of a better word. And that's down to things like social media, giving people a platform and giving people a voice to say what they want, when they want, without any recriminations. Do you know what I mean? Like there's no fear of getting pulled back. And that comes in with the racism as well. You know, you see Ian Wright getting abused and getting absolutely torn and new one online with these little wet wipes and Kerry and all, and nothing happens because people can do and say what they want. There's no comeback on it. And you know, you're spot on about your man David Logie. How he was the England fan representative in the first place is beyond me. How they picked Tommy Robinson clone to be the fan rep is bad. How he was selected to go on and give the interview number two, can't get my head around it. How Sky News and these others reported it, number three, baffled. But then how they pushed it afterwards, because they didn't do it and think, all right, this is bad. They then went pushing and promoting it. Do you know what I mean? Like as if it was normal. So it's baffling what's going on. And people, I don't want to say gullible, because there's probably a lot of people in the chat tonight that agree with Bjorn, the taking the knee and all that. People have their own opinion on it, but I'll call them gullible, because if you're taking the knee, right, if Harry Kane and right, Jordan Henderson wasn't playing, but Jordan Henderson and Harry Maguire and these senior English, white English players are taking the knee, they're not taking it because George Floyd got killed in America. Phil spoke about this last week. Colin Kaepernick is, how many years ago, Phil? Six years ago?
Before his contract ran out at the end of 17, so, yeah.
Start taking the knee because of the treatment of black people in America by the police, police brutality and all that sort of thing. Colin Kaepernick done it, and several other players joined in. Colin Kaepernick got blackballed, thrown out of the league. This has all happened before George Floyd. George Floyd happened, what, last year, 2 years ago, Max? That kicked off a surge of violence and looting and things like that. And these people, these right-wingers say, looting, looting, looting. This is because it's happening in the most deprived neighborhoods and the most deprived areas in America and in these places and in England, in London, in Toxted in the 80s, in Brixton. It's the lowest economy, lowest social, disadvantaged. Yeah, socioeconomic disadvantaged areas that these things happen in. So you can't say, oh, well, you know, they're getting... What's going on there? Who's wrecking?
Whose gaff is getting wrecked?
That's Pete, definitely.
Is that Pete? Is somebody breaking ice in your gaff there, Pete?
Yeah.
Just tell them to put their earphones on when they're breaking the ice, will you?
I know he was on a good rant there, and I'm not forgetting where it was. But now people like are, you know, they're forgetting that, you know, it's nothing to do with George Floyd. This is white players saying they've had enough of their colleagues, of their friends getting abuse. getting absolutely hammered. You know, Manchester United lose a game, and the first thing that Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial and Paul Pogba and Eric Bailly and Mason Greenwood and all these black players, they're getting monkeys, bananas, all this stuff on Twitter by little faceless maggots that if they seen them in the street, they wouldn't say boo to them. But because it's all behind an avatar and it's all, you know, anonymous, they feel free, they can deal with. The right wing have been given a voice in through politics over the last 10 years. Look at the UK, look at America, Europe, France. You know, they've all sort of seen a rise in right-wing politics, and they've been given a voice and they've been allowed to get away with it. And this is a culmination of that. If you're doing that, taking a knee, you are supporting racism. And I don't, people cannot say that I'm not, I just disagree with men having to kneel, British men having to kneel. That's all a load of bollocks. Do you know what I mean? Because it's not that they're doing that. They've given their reason. They've given their explanation. Why do you feel the need to boo it and challenge it? You just don't do that. You don't have, they're not asking you to kneel with them. Do you know what I mean? Just
Shane, anything to add?
No, listen, I'm on with Keith and Pete, and they're far more intelligent on the subject than me, really. You know, but listen, it's even go back to today. I read comments from Suchek from West Ham, who had the clarity. He made comments about saying that the ban that his mate got for Slavia Prague playing against Rangers for racially abusing Glenn Kamara was unjust, and he didn't really say it, and he's not that type of bloke, and blah, blah. And then he had to roll back today saying, listen, my comments were misconstrued. I lost in translation and the language barrier, and I didn't really mean it. And also, it creeps in. It's in that Eastern Bloc in that part, and it's creeping across, and it's just, do you know what I mean? People are... They kind of said it's like an excuse. They kind of feel like they have an excuse for it now, and like for them, for being taken the knee, it's just absolutely baffling. Like I listened to you last week, Phil. It was very good about Kaepernick and stuff like that. I'm glad Pete is on, because I really like listening to Pete on topics like this. Yeah. But it's just you're dealing with the lowest of the low there, really, and really the least intelligent.
Sorry, Pete, can I just jump in? Just respond to a couple of things. There's been a couple of mentions in the comments, and I'm probably in the camp. I don't see myself particularly left-wing or socialist or Marxist or right-wing or conservative. I'm probably very much central, because that's what I've been grown up in. I've grown up in the issue. A centrist-based society, so I can fall either one way or the other. That's what Ireland is. It's been a system of coalitions for almost since the state was founded. And because of that, we never have any far right or far left, really strongholds of ideology in here. Unfortunately, England isn't. England is a deeply rooted right-wing society that's had conservative powers more or less undisturbed for the best part of over a century at this stage. So it's not surprising that, there's this idea that it's a small minority. It's not. It's the vast majority of England. They've elected one of the hardest right-wing governments in years with the recent election and the campaign for Brexit. Brexit was all about getting rid of foreigners out of England. Yeah. It wasn't about anything else. The idea of taking back sovereignty and taking back the markets, which if anybody with an ounce of sense looked into it, realised that this was going to be an absolute shit show for England, which it's turned out to be. And anyone that with the sense tends to be leaning towards the left side of England. So this leads into a whole debate around politics and football. Fundamentally, though, these players are the Black Lives Matter. I see people going on about the Black Lives Matter thing is a turned into a Marxist thing. That's bollocks. This is all, that's Fox News. You're getting spun a Fox News story about this is socialism and this is things. Socialism by its very
and
nature.
It's not new. It's not new. The Americans have been doing this since the 19, pardon my language, fucking 50s. They had a man called Joe McCarthy who tried to run out of the country, tried to imprison, kill anybody with leftist ideas. They went as far as black people. The blacks are communists as well. It's about marginalizing people, labeling themselves idiots in Alabama will think they're communists, they're leftists. Let's get rid of them.
Can I just run back on this, because if there is a relevant point to why players should be allowed. My bit is that players should be allowed protest whatever they want, whenever they want, however they feel. Okay? Yeah. It doesn't have to be taking the knee. But we as fans should respect the protest, whether we agree with it, whether we don't. That's what it is. You look at the danger that's going on in England. You see this GB News, all this type of stuff. They want, that's what they like, right? And that's what they want. So I'm not going down the whole politics tripe. I just, I look at it and I see a very right-leaning society in England, and their politics match up with it. And the views expressed by somebody that was representing what was the English Supporters Trust or whatever they put them on Sky News is very much representative of the vast majority of the people who vote in elections in England that result in the governments that they get. This is not, and that's why I it gets to me, the small minority are the people that the majority of us follow on Liverpool or football Twitter, which are a lot more left-leaning in terms of their views, a lot more fraternal when it comes to how they want to see society, and a lot more stronger when it comes to action and protest. And we talked to the guys from Spirit of Shankly, and you know, I would sit on both sides. It doesn't really bother me. I'd sit on both sides of the fence, as I said, because I'm a centrist. And I that's the way I feel. I'm also older in my age, so I have a right. I get more. You end up being more conservative leaning the older you get, because you've got kids and stuff like that. And it's been proven over time that people do move towards that side of it. And that's just the way it is, right? And I'm sure there's always people who will be opposite ends of the spectrum. It's where you get. But when it comes back to the football, and when it comes back to being able to do things, sport has always acted as a voice to impart and expose something that is being kept under the table or being kept under wraps that's there. And sport will always be that. And as I said, we as fans need to respect people who want to use their voice, which they haven't been able to use up until now. And as I would have had conversations, it would have been like, you think about the amount of people of color in various different sports around the world who've come from oppressed regimes and even come from situations that we've seen in the last 30 years. Like I've known people all my life, and we've often talked about this in terms of what he would have endured as a kid and wouldn't have been seen as racist now would be seen as absolutely abhorrent behavior in day-to-day talk. So it's like, it's this is where we are. We're in a society which on a moral compass is moving in the right direction, but actually underneath that, the real population isn't up with the moral compass. But at least if the moral compass is guided in the right way, it will bring people along gradually, but it will take a while for that to happen.
Do you know what you touched on there, Phil, before we finish on that? You touched on something there about the racism thing and the people being oppressed. And it the oppressed people are... I don't want to have a dig at England again, right? And there's a lot of English people in the chat. A lot of English people follow our channel and listen to the shows and all that. But England as a nation are imperialist, colonial, all that stuff. They were the oppressors. So naturally, they have that sort of oppressive nature. I'm not about the normal person on the street. I'm on about sort of as a nation. But if you look at the James McLean issues over the years for refusing to wear a poppy, never done anything... never done anything really divisive about, never came out and said anything. He just didn't wear a poppy and came out time and time again and explained the reason and why and the abuse he gets for that. Do you know what I mean? People don't want, you know, we won the war for your free speech. Oh, no, not that free speech. Do you know what I mean? Once your free speech is in line with our free speech. And, you know, that's not right. Do you know what I mean? That is not right. And that's the thing. People, you won't change that mentality and you won't change that mindset. But the one thing to do is to make it uncomfortable for the people who oppose that. That'd be my take on it. Don't let them have an easy ride.
Shane, I just want to jump in because I want to bring it back to football. Taking that free speech into mind then. Thanks for the views, but like, how does that feed into the fact that international football is shite?
Absolutely. Well, I think the fact that it's so bad, to be honest with you, Phil, has
you given, just want to distract has, us. Is that what
has,
it is?
No. It has made that platform easily accessible. Really, I mean, it's so bad. I mean, you look at tonight, for example. Look at Spain versus Sweden, and you know, I do my homework as I always did, and you know, I look at. But first of all, you start from the game, and you look at the entire front six, if you will, five of the front six being replaced before the 75th minute. I mean, Luis Enrique is a decent coach, you know, but you're looking at two sets of players. I mean, you look at the Swedish side. I think two of them are playing with Krasnodar. Three or four of them are playing back in Sweden. You know, two or three of them have had their best years in the SPL with Celtic. You're talking about a very workmanlike 4-4-2. And you look at Spain, you know, I see a couple of players who aren't playing for their clubs. I look at Rodri, who's in and out, to be honest. I look at Pau Torres, who's a kid. You know, Marcos Llorente, okay, he's won the league. Koke, workmanlike. Ferran Torres hasn't done anything yet with his career. Obviously, Morata is the best worst centre forward I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Nobody seems to own him, whether it's Juventus or Atletico Madrid. Nobody seems to want to admit to own him. Olmo, who's, to be honest, if this was a Spain squad 10 years ago, wouldn't be anywhere near this. Laporte, who wasn't Spanish until 6 weeks ago. To be quite honest with you, the standard of international football, I mean, Phil, you've been saying this for a long, long time, and I've been kind of like, ah, come on now, Phil, it's international football. But this tournament, it's not just because Ireland aren't there. This tournament, really, I mean, look at England even. You know, Calvin Phillips, their best player the other day. You know, there's a lot of players playing with top clubs there. And as a cohesive unit, it's just not there. It looks pedestrian championship standard. It looks tentative. It's predictable. You know, the Holland game, even they're saying it was game of the tournament. It was a good 45 minutes, the second half. The first 15, 20 minutes of the first half was about missing pretty simple chances, to be honest with you. This is a bad tournament, guys. International football is in the toilet. And that's, you know, to be honest with you, why other things are getting a platform. And that was my entire point, to be honest with you. It's international football's poor.
Yes.
How's your love for the international footballs that they're kicking at the moment?
Listen, I think we've probably spoken, we've touched on this before, maybe on the forum, and it's worth touching on again, obviously, because it's topical with the Euros. But like, I'm sure, listen, we can all remember the times I used to get a no-home school because Ireland lands down a no-floodlight and we all got the no-home to finish 15 minutes early to burst home in the door to watch Ireland playing and everything else. And I'd be similar to Pete. I'm not a fan of it. It's workmanlike. It makes it all the worse we're not there because there's a lot of teams, the majority of teams aren't very good and we still can't fucking qualify. But having said that, it's basically it's this since the dawn of the Champions League and the money has been that's become the biggest show in town. You touched on it last week, I think, Phil, basically saying since the France 98 was the last real World Cup and since then the money element that's gone into club football to get the best teams, to get the best players, to get the best TV deals, the TV rights, it's not the World Cup anymore. It's all about the European Cup and the Champions League. And listen, I'll hold my hand up. I would be the first man dressed head to toe in green in the boozer, or certainly would have been before my daughter was born, into the boozer on the bandwagon following Ireland. There really is not too many things better when Ireland qualify for the tournament. Now, in general, it's probably only going to be the three group games and then we're heading home, but it's great. But listen, as far we don't generally get there, and it's kind of a damning indictment when you tune into an awful lot of tournaments, and the general consensus from everybody is really there's not really a standout team.
Keith, I'm going to leave you to last because I want to segue into the next topic, right? But my view is it's well established at this stage. International football died when football became global. Right, Dan, that's the 1998 is the cutoff point. It's like after that, it's Champions League football all the way. And we've never had a truly great tournament since then. We've had touched on World Cup 2006 in Germany. That was probably the closest we got to it. We talk about Irish people talk about Euro 2002 because we have very fond memories and going to get knocked out by Spain in a penalty shootout. There's lots of fond memories there. But in reality, we haven't had a truly great tournament again since France 98. So anyone that was born after 98, hardship. But in this tournament is an absolute pig's ear for a start, because the new format's poxy. Nobody knows what's going on. I turn on to see Belgium playing Russia, and Belgium are the home team and the match is being played in Leningrad. It's like, I just don't know what's going on, right? So like, I just was right, I'm done. And also, for anyone that's listening, that's a Marxist reference for you as well. So,
I was wondering whether that was on purpose or not, but I should have known better.
And then you turn on, like, honestly, it's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. If England win this thing, they'll have played one match outside of Wembley. Yeah,
six out of seven games or something, isn't it?
Is in Wembley. What's the point? Look, where's the fairness in this tournament? Surely international football is meant to be fair, right? The idea of a tournament that it strips away the home advantage and everyone gets a fair shot in the tournament itself, and it's about the best team. It's meant to be the best teams playing in an equal environment where they rise to the top on neutral ground, right? With the exception of the host nation, and we all know that, right? Mm. And very few host nations win the tournaments, and it's been statistically proven over time. But there's now a question mark. Who is the team? What are the groups? I don't even know what the groups are. Yeah. I don't know if everyone's played or not played. I turn on the it looks like a bunch of Pro Evo 09 regents. Like, there's a fellow called Elmo playing for Spain. What's that about? Oh, last time he was on Sesame Street. There's Jared Moreno. I made him up in FIFA 14. That was the last time I played. But he looks like a cart horse running around the pitch, plodding around like mad. Thiago's on the bench without doubt of class. I've watched some highlights.
Four groups, three teams come out with it. The three, am I right, Keith? The four best tour places come out. Yeah. Like, that's nearly as bad as Keith is going to come on to Copa American Common. It's nearly as bad as this year. Like,
this is essentially scandalous. UEFA went to the GA and they asked the GA, how do I invent a tournament that makes
the
initial knockout rounds irrelevant? Right, because essentially, if three teams come out of a four-team group, what's the point? You could just you go back to what they did in 1990 and just draw lots to see who the worst team is in the group, kick them out, skip a whole load of the tournament and get onto the business stage where teams actually have to play against each other and it's worth something. But yeah, genuinely, as I said, and come on to Keith, just for me, looking at this tournament, I don't see the buy-in. On previous tournaments, you could always see the buy-in. You could always see the world-class player. You could see the world-class team. France had that look. The only thing that's probably dragging me in a wee bit is the fact that France are killing each other in their team camp. When they get knocked out, I saw some of the England match. Fuck me, I turned it off. Absolutely diabolical. Yeah. And then I saw the narrative that was going on afterwards that there was a real strong performance by England. For a start, I didn't know half the fellas playing. And when I watched them, I don't want to know half the players playing because they're shy. Is basically it, right? So it's like you'll never see them playing in the Champions League final. So that's the main thing, like that you're getting over. That Swedish team is a gem to knock out England at some stage, right? They just sit there for 96 minutes and score in the 97th minute with a bun over the top, and your man Isak will run on and score against it. So yeah, look, all being told, I completely get why the lack of interest. It's the off. Yeah, Laura Duffy, that's great. It is the off field drama that's probably going to drag people into this tournament because there seems to be a lot of that knocking about. There seems to be a lot of unhappy camps. There seems to be a lot of...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And that's dragging me. I'm more interested in the stories around the pitch at this moment in time than I am of what's going on the pitch, because what's going on the pitch is poxy. Whereas, Keith, you're currently watching Argentina versus Chile at the moment, so should we all turn off the Euros and start watching the Copa America?
Messi is after calling in a free kick there to pull Argentina 1-0 up against Chile. Fantastic. Wonderful. But in all seriousness, are we going on to my subject now, yeah?
Yeah, you may as well, because I'm sick of talking about the Euros.
No, but you know, it sort of ties in. I love the Copa America. It's out of all the tournaments, it's my favourite. And the reason it's my favourite, and they've been trying to make a bollocks of it for a few years now, is that there's only 10 teams in it this year, right? There's 10 South American teams. Now, Australia and Qatar were invited in and they had to pull out at the last minute. Even then, you've got two groups of six or whatever. As it is, it's two groups of five. The Euros used to be good when it was smaller competition, but then you have the breakaway of all these nations, the breakup, and Russia suddenly has 8 or 9, 10 countries. Yugoslavia has 5 or 6, you know, and there's so many more countries now to get involved. And the qualities just went to shite. Like, and UEFA are just throwing more and more teams into it. Like, we're going to have a 64-team World Cup and probably 64-team Euros soon as well. You know, it's just madness. Whereas the Copa, It's 10 teams. It's, you know, the same teams are there. You know who you're getting. You know who's going to be there. Some of them are garbage, like Bolivia are traditionally the worst team in South America in these things. You'll still look and see a player that you don't know because it still retains that bit of mystery that European football doesn't anymore. And they
play at a million fucking feet above sea level as well, Keith.
Yeah. That's it. Six minutes in and your teams are bleeding bollocks and gasping for oxygen. But they're the little things. They're the little tweaks. Like, you go in there and you could have Brazil could be the best team in the world back in the 90s when they had Ronaldo, Romario, all these guys, world champs. They go to they go to Bolivia and they go to Paraguay and all these high altitude places and they can't run for shy. And they're the little quirks and all that you enjoy about this. I love the Coppa. I think it's brilliant. But we're also seeing now the grid coming into it because if people don't know, there's a global pandemic out there, COVID-19, and they come up all done everything to get this tournament played, despite countries not wanting a part of it and the teams not wanting a part of it. So it was meant to be held in Colombia and Argentina. The first time it was going to be a joint hosting of the tournament. Colombia, they pulled out. Pete will probably be aware of this, fact that his good lady wife is a Colombian. But there's political unrest there. There's protests going on all over the place against
people
the president.
Being killed on the streets.
Yeah, sexually assaulted, killed, disappeared. And like, it's madness what's going on there. And it's down, and you'll probably know more than correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, but what I was reading on it is like, you know, tax increases and health cuts and all these sort of things due to COVID, and the president's just lashing them in there, and the people are going blade mad over this. So it was meant to be going there. They're like, no, nope, can't guarantee the safety while I'm not having that. I think even the final actually was supposed to be held in Barranquilla, if I could be wrong. So it was meant to be there. They cancelled it. They pulled out. So Argentina, right, yous have it on yous our own. If yous need a dig out, ask his neighbours, you know, Chile might be able to put a game on, Paraguay might be able to put a game on. But Argentina are like, no, COVID's going through the roof here. We can't do this. And at that point, you're thinking, right, this is out the window, cancelled, scrap it. The only logical thing, because Brazil is up to its bollocks in COVID cases. So that's a non-runner. Can Uruguay host it? I don't think so. But no, goes to Brazil. Brazil have, I wrote this down, the second highest death toll in the world due to COVID, the 486,000 deaths and 17.5 million cases of COVID. How they've said that they can do it is beyond me. But then you hear the last Copa America in 2019, I think made CONMEBOL $120 million just from hosting it. And when you hear those figures, and I know, right, there's not going to be fans at it, so it's not going to be that high. But when you start hearing those figures, you know what the reasoning is. I mean, you hear the Brazilian players, Alisson, all the Brazilian players, Tite, the coach, they came out and said, we don't want this, but we're going to do it because Brazil called. Do you know what I mean? Brazil's telling us that we want to have it, so we're going to have it. Mm. But it kicked off there over the weekend, right? We're on, I think, the third game. We had Brazil played Venezuela, do you know what I mean? Yeah. He won 3-0. It was a little dirty match. I love that about South American football, I'm not gonna lie. But you had your Neymar gets a goal, Marquinhos scored, and Gabigol Barbosa gets a goal. So Brazil get off to a flyer. They're happy. Last night, I don't know if anyone saw the Colombia Ecuador game last night, the goal, the Edwin Cardona free kick, about six passes, and they dinked it in. It looked like he was squaring up for a shot. Done it all right.
That's just
let the civil, what do you call this?
Spain's Euro hopes going past at the moment.
That's it, getting sent by Luis Enrique. But Uruguay by Ecuador 1-0 last night, and then we've Argentina are on at the moment against Chile 1-0 up. Messi gets a perler because, as I said, in South America, you see players that you don't know. We all know Messi and Neymar and these guys. But I've given a little list, right, because I hate these people who are know-it-alls that watch football all the time, but you know they don't watch football all the time because there's not enough hours in the day, right, to watch the football that these people claim to know. I'm not naming any names, but I'm one of these characters as well by the looks of it.
Pedigree chum, you'll know what I mean.
There you go, you said it. But the thing I love doing, I watch a lot of Copa Libertadores, all that sort of stuff. I don't watch Premier League football. People think, I give me opinion about Premier. If Liverpool aren't playing, I don't watch Premier League. Man United, Man City, going for the title, wouldn't watch it. I'd watch Fair City or Coronation Street instead. Not a chance I'd watch any of that show. But I do watch a lot of South American football because that's just what I like. So a few players to look out for. I'll quickly go through this. I won't bore you. But there's a lad off Uruguay called Facundo Torres, right? And he plays for Peñarol. And he's a forward player now. I don't know if he's going to start, but he might figure. He is the business. Look out for him. He's only young, 21, but he's been to Inter Milan I don't know why, because they haven't got a washout, but it only cost about $12 million, $12 million or something like that. So you get the deal. You know, you got the young fluff Pellestri off Penarol as well. There's a lot of talent coming through there. But there's two Ecuadorians, right? Gonzalo Plata is 20, Sporting Lisbon winger, played last night on the right wing. And a guy who signed for Brighton, right? He's only 19, and his name is Moish Caicedo. Brighton signed this young fella, right? He is the best midfield talent I've seen in South America in years. This fella is made for the Premier League, so watch out for him. He's a centre mid, right? He's only 19. He hasn't had a sniff at Brighton. This young fella is going to be bleeding mustard. Do you see the likes of, what's your man's name that everyone knows, Basuma off Brighton?
Right.
When he gets sold and this young fella gets in, box to box, passing midfield, at this young fella is the business. So watch out for him if he gets a sniff.
The new Lucas, is he?
The new Lucas Leiva. The new Lucas Leiva. I thought you would appreciate that, Phil. Yeah, new Lucas
Socrates, by all accounts, to
yeah,
be honest.
No, he is. He's this young fella's quality. But that's what I enjoy runs about it. There was a point to me. Yeah, runs and porridge. That's it. Very stodgy. Likes a sidewards pass. But that's what I love. Altitude,
but just not good. Like where most footballers played in the world.
This is it.
On football pitches.
No, but you know what? That's what I love about the Coppa, is discovering these players that, not that nobody knows, because I don't talk to people, I don't stop people in the street and say, yeah, I've an Ecuadorian midfielder for you. None of that shit. I just watch it for myself and because I enjoy it. And if we look back at the Euros, right, I was watching, you know the way football's coming home because England won the Euros this year. There's been a lot of TV stuff about Euro 96, right? And I remember looking at it and thinking, it's probably the last tournament where you get these players that would surprise you coming out of nowhere. And Matthias Sammer was the best player in that tournament by a mile. But he done all his good work because Dieter Royals covered for him in every game. And Dieter Royals went in the holding midfield player and sat in every time Sammer went on a run. And no one ever heard of Dieter Royals. Do you know what I mean?
In fairness, he was very workmanlike.
Quality and he was doing his job, Pete. But it was always this thing that you'd still find these players. A Russian fella, I can't think of his name, scores a beauty against, I think it was the Czechs or Croatia or something like that. And these fellas, it was the last time we felt that you'd be finding these little gems at tournaments. Do you know what I mean? Like, because football, you touched on it there, Phil. 98, it went globalised and it went commercialised and all that. It did. And it ties in because that's why I've no interest in it now. We see too much football and too much European football.
You look at the last Euros, for example, when Hal Robson Kanu sent half of the Belgians defence for a hot dog. I mean, he was a free agent doing that. Yeah. Now, normally speaking, in normal times, he'd have got a big move somewhere. But afterwards, he struggled to get a contract. He was finished at Reading. He struggled to get a contract with West Brom. And I think that was on the last day of the window. So it's just not even the window that it used to be, international football. And funny, you talk about Matthias Sammer. I mean, that guy would have been an absolute world beat if it wasn't for two very, very bad knees. But those days are over. Those days of picking up good players. I mean, I look at, for example, Conor Washington had a very good tournament for Northern Ireland when they qualified. Nobody took a chance on him. QPR, I think, gave him a new contract. Nobody takes a chance on these players. It's, as Phil says, it's fellas that do well in the Champions League for a round or two. If you're playing with a Slavia Prague and you go far in the Champions League, or if you go far in the Europa, like, for example, Pau Torres will sign for a big club after winning the Euro. But international windows for players now, it's just gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
In fairness, Phil, you love the Coppa this year because, like he said, there's two groups of five and eight teams are going through, four in each group into the quarterfinals. One team is getting knocked out.
Point?
Like he said, it's been a horror show because the other two couldn't travel for COVID. And then what people didn't know was Colombia were hosting, as were Argentina. The most northerly and southerly points on the continent, right, on a huge continent. Brazil were based in Colombia, but they were barred from traveling to Colombia due to COVID restrictions in Colombia. They were not going to be allowed in. They were like the country, Colombia had shut up shop in Brazil due to the cases. And then that's where they, like, I'd text Keith or I'd put it on the WhatsApp when Team Vickery is on, and you'd get him around as Brazilian, the English-based, English-Brazilian-based journalist. He's absolutely brilliant. But I urge anyone to
Tim Vickery.
Tim Vickery to listen to his stuff.
No. The BBC.
He's BBC journalist, Pete. Yeah, I think so.
He's the best freelancer. American.
Freelancer. He writes for The Guardian as well.
Yeah, he's from Brazil. And he's absolutely, he's fantastic. But he was talking about coming about, like what Keith said, that they pay the bills, to make the money, the TV rights are sold. But because the World Cup qualifiers were cancelled the last round due to COVID and the state in South America, the South American teams have, there's buckets of qualifiers left in order to get them sorted for next year, for the next World Cup. And Tim Vickery is basically saying the Copa should be scrapped and they should use that time to play the World Cup qualifiers, because he basically doesn't know how they're going to squeeze them all in and fit them all in. He said it's an absolute shit show from top to bottom, but come the ball, have to pay the bills. So
they'll be playing.
Do you know what? If you look at the likes of Venezuela, right? Venezuela have a decent enough young team, 8 COVID cases on the eve of the tournament. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Bolivia, the probably the worst team in it, 3 or 4 of their better players COVID, and they're all just going to get riddled. They're all going to get rinsed with this bleeding thing, and they just, no one has an appetite for it at the moment. And with the exception maybe of Messi, who wants to get one under his belt before he retires, I think they'd all just happily jack it in. Because Davos, right, you know, where are they going to play these games? And from a selfish point of view as well, like if you look at Liverpool, we don't want air players cramming in games as well, you know, and we've got, you know, 3 players in the squad currently that are Brazilian internationals. You don't want them getting
beaten. Every time Andrew Robertson makes a run down that left-hand side, I think to myself, any minute now his hamstring's going to pop. I couldn't give 2 shits if he plays well for Scotland.
I think I'm sort of leaning more towards Keith's camp. The fact that the Copa America is full of lads that you have no idea who they are makes it an attractive tournament to watch, right? There's nothing better than an international tournament where you're having a breeze who they are. Well, saying that, I have no idea who the regens are that are playing in the European Championships. I was turning on the Holland game last night and I was like, Dumfries, that's a town in Scotland.
He was playing for Aruba, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
You stick on, somebody was playing for Finland and he grew up in our town. There was another fella, Tommy Delaney, playing for Denmark or something, and he grew up over in Cabra. Like, you know, I'm there going, Rice and Grealish, both of them good local Crumlin and Drimna fellas. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're there going, loads of these Irish lads are just gone off and sort of mercing themselves around Europe. But at the same time, I look at these teams and I'm going, these don't look anything near the teams that I grew up watching when it came to international football. The squads are few and far between that you even recognise who the players are. That Spanish squad tonight, I don't watch as much football as I may have done 5 or 6 years ago. Terrible. Fuck me. Like, I barely recognised anyone. You know what I mean?
The front three, I mean, just awful. Awful.
But this is what I'm saying. So, you know, you look at the English team and it seems to have cowed itself down to the great god of Harry Kane, who's crap, is going to be honest with you. Like, in 20 years, nobody's going to remember Harry Kane. They're not going to remember anything he ever did. It'd be a bit like Shearer. He'll just be doing, he'd be pulling it on the television. That's what you remember him as.
I think you're spot on, Phil, as regards what Keith was saying, because with social media and the internet, it's very easy to look at players, but people generally follow people in their own bubble. So it'd be Liverpool and stuff like that. So people aren't really open to seeing South American players and as much as they would in the Premier League and stuff like that. You look at, you were probably at the game. Didn't Brazil come to Lansdowne in the late mid-80s? Liam Brady and the goal around that time, sure, no one knew you knew who the Brazilian players were, but you couldn't flick on your phone and go on YouTube and look at a highlight reel of Revelino or whoever, you know what I mean? Whoever rocked up.
Jossie Marr would have been the big one because he scores in 82, you know, and Jossie Marr's
then days like that, France coming as well, didn't they, with Platini and stuff like that. So, people obviously knew them players from reading the papers, but my point is, it wasn't just flick onto your phone, get onto YouTube, what's this fella about? Whereas, what Keith is saying now with the Libertadores is you're able to do that, but you will have to kind of search out these names of the players and search them out and have a real interest in finding them out rather than the stuff that's ran down your throat every day as regards across the water.
Come here to me, and this probably leads us into the next thing. Danny Murphy calling Oyarzabal, Olazabal. Like, let's be honest about it. If you look at that Spanish team, it just looks like, it genuinely looks like a bunch of Pro Evo regen names. Like, there's not a serious player there. Unai Simon. That's just like taking Unai Emery and a fella called Simon that used to play at Aston Villa and stick him in a goal, right? You've got Pau Torres. That's just taking Fernando Torres and sticking somebody else's name.
Fernando Torres and Tepeu.
Yeah, Almo, that used to be a program on CBS, right? Almo's landing or whatever it was. So, yeah, they make porridge as well. You've got Gerard Moreno. There's Gerard and Moreno. We put it together, we make a player. And then we have, Fernand Torres, again, just for the things. Jordi Alba, he's real. So do you have to have a couple of ones in it just to keep just it interesting?
Fernand Torres is definitely Fernando Torres regen then years ago, bro. 100%.
It's like when they had Kyle Walker Phillips. Do you remember he just appeared to replace Kyle Walker?
Yeah, that's championship manager stuff. That's championship manger.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. So it's like Pedri is the future of Spain. Is he? Yeah. Pedro. Remember him?
Do you remember when to get an international cap, you actually had to be the present? Don't want to rain on that lad's parade. He's made a good point. But this is the thing about international football. It's a mixture of players from the, you know, couple from the past, a couple from the future, but nothing. Anyone that's from the present is on the bench. I mean, you're playing against a Walkman-like Swedish team who are going to set up in two banks of four.
We'll talk about football again. I'll talk about regen names. which is much more. Forget about that.
It's true.
This tournament is about making up names. So I challenge anyone in the comments to keep an eye out and see who can come up with the best regen name they've seen in the tournament so far. And like,
Jordan Larson. I'll go with that.
Yeah, Henrik Larsson's son. Henning Berg's son, Magnus Berg, missed the sitter at the back post for them, right? Chris Isaac, that's Chris Isaac's son that used to write the song off.
Wicked Games.
He's a great singer. You should see him in the changing room after a match.
Brilliant. I prefer Pete singing it, in fairness.
Exactly. Mo Saddam, left back. So, all right. There is. So I want to see everyone next week. I want to know who your best regen name you've seen across the course of the tournament. I was looking at that Holland team yesterday. Still has me baffled. Those fellas on there, Doom, a Prune, or something like, where did they get him from? And then your man Zorkev. Yuri Zhurkov playing for Russia. That was like they had no idea who the Russian footballers were and had to kick one of them out of the tournament just to turn up so that we knew it was the Russian team.
They always have players that go into their 40s, don't they?
I know you didn't hear it because you didn't watch it, Phil. They tried to get Akinfeev out of the tournament to come back and play in this tournament, and things must be very bad if they're trying to get him back.
He was absolutely
poisoned in his prime, and they tried to get him out of the tournament.
The problem is he played in good sides, so he got away with it.
Listen, I looked at Ukraine and they had random South American lads playing for them and everything. It was like they had to just get fellas in, Marlos, that's just a make you up name. But this sort of takes me on to the next bit, because the TV coverage, I want to talk particularly around the Christian Eriksen piece as well. And Shane, this is your topic. So since we talked about regents, go on, take us into the TV coverage and what you've seen going on and what your thoughts are around this.
No, look, I think this isn't the fucking special topic or anything like that. I'm not going to be saying it, and that hasn't been said already, but just with it being on tonight, it's topical, obviously, as well. Just the television coverage around what happened to Christian Eriksen. I mean, the camera being panned on him when he's getting treatment for a cardiac arrest on the pitch, so much so that the television coverage were on, maybe they did from the screen, they formed a ring around him, and then the camera pans to his partner, who was obviously inconsolable as to what's going on. And we're living in a world where, like, a streaker will run on the pitch and the camera will go off, the commentator will say, oh, we've a streaker on the pitch. Just awful people. The directors of the television companies just tone deaf, and even bringing it on from that slightly, I heard Peter Schmeichel on today, who really let the cat out of the bag, basically saying what people already knew, that Denmark were given three options. They were told you can play tomorrow at 1 o'clock or whatever, you could finish the 50 minutes tomorrow, the 24 hours later. they could finish it there and then, or they were told they'd have to forfeit the game 3-0. And now for that to happen, like, he's obviously getting that first-hand information, Casper. And for stuff like that to happen with people, like, it goes back to, I know you were very good on the Super League stuff, particularly yourself, that comes back to, like, UEFA being the good guys and crying in the corner saying, oh, look what's happened to us there. The big clubs are cheating on us, basically, and trying to go off and doing this. The UEFA are disgusting. They're absolutely disgusting. They will fine Nicholas Bentner for wearing Paddy Power boxer shorts and pulling them up when he scores a goal. But when fans are monkey chants and everything like that, like England and Bulgaria, they'll be handed a fucking 10 grand fine. Yeah.
600
quid. UEFA are absolutely rotten and disgusting to the core. So listen, like I said, it was a topic that I wasn't going to be saying it, and that it wasn't said already, but I thought the coverage around, the television coverage around what happened to Ericsson, particularly showing his partner inconsolable, that was wrong. That was
good, that coverage. Was
wrong.
But huge kudos to the lads in the studios. Ian Wright was up in arms. He kept tweeting every 5 minutes, when are you going to turn it off? When are you going to? And he's sitting in one of the studios. Cut the live feed. Yeah. So there is some decency out there.
Yeah, 100%.
I've seen someone saying today that, and it's probably a very valid point, you know, probably a very valid point, that they can't go straight back to the studio because a lot of the time the people aren't sitting in the studio, they're going off and getting makeup done and all that sort of thing. But surely they could have got back quick. Do you know what I mean? If they're watching the match and they, and no matter what channel you're watching on, whether it was BBC or in Ireland, I was watching it on RTE. And, you know, the visible shock of the pundits in the studio was palpable. Yeah. It was palpable, right? But you'd rather that than have to watch, you know, it was like they were trying to sneak a picture of Christian Eriksen. Do you know what I mean? Like, the players formed the guard, one of the most beautiful things I've seen. Horrific. But, you know, these lads, someone said, you know, these aren't 40-year-old men, 50-year-old men. These are 20-year-olds, you know, mid-20s, early 30s. And their mate is on the ground. And they don't know what's wrong with the fella. And do you know what I mean? There has to be something that could have been done to stop that. That was spot on to go in and zoom in on his partner. And, you know, for all she knows, our partner, our husband, I don't know if they're married, I think they're just partners, is lying dead on a football pitch. 29 years old, he's lying dead on a football pitch. Do you know, there's no need to look at her.
Like, my take on this is that, you know, if this was the first time it happened, I can understand why TV companies or whatever would know what to do. But we've had multiple incidents. We had Mark Vivian Foe drop dead. There was TV coverage of that. That sets your precedent from
his
that point.
His face was plastered front page in the newspapers, Phil, laying dead on the ground.
But Shane, that's my point. We've had precedent set, right? We had uproar about the pictures being plastered all over the papers at the time. The videos always get out online. No matter what happens, they're always out there. And then it's up to the TV companies to have their protocol in place that if something that looks potentially serious happens, that you cut away from it, right? If they can cut away from a streaker and just show random parts of the pitch and the crowd while things are going on, there's absolutely no reason why they can't have the same protocol in place that if a player collapses for a what appears to be injury-based thing that looks serious, and you could tell it was serious. Like, you could tell from the outset. If it takes Anthony Taylor less than 20 seconds to react and the players react, and it takes Simon Kjaer under 10 seconds to react that there's something wrong here, then that's the same reaction time for the cameras. I actually think from a cameraman's perspective, I can understand the logic why you would naturally zoom in to see what was going on, because they would naturally zoom in on most things, right? That's part of what they do. But it's the director's job to cut away, right? It's the director who goes to cut. It's not necessarily the cameraman's. It's the director's job to cut away from the shot because he's in control of the cameras and what people are seeing. And they have multi-cameras scattered around the stand so they can move it away from anything what they want to do and train it anywhere. So you can still have a live feed going out. The commentators are still talking about it. It's the same as if a streaker, as I said, a streaker appears on the pitch. That's exactly what they do. So that's what gets me on this. And in this particular matter, because as much as people are moaning about people retweeting what was shown on television, it's crazy. But I will say that the standards across Europe differ from country to country in terms of what they do show, even across the globe. Like, as well stated on here, I'm a huge NFL fan, but they show injuries all the time, and they show it like, and they show it in slow motion. They show you the injury happening and from multiple angles, just to show you how bad the injury was. Yeah. Like, this is, you know, depending on where you are, people know that in certain instances, injuries and stuff like that sells views. It sells clicks and it sells engagement. And I hate breaking it down that this is what it gets down to for football companies and horrible elitist monoliths and what's the word they use? It's not even a corporation. It's gone beyond it. But the UEFA in itself won't care, because those videos being shared will have the sponsors boards on the background. And I know this sounds horrific, but ultimately that's all sells, because it brings it back to something happened in the UEFA European Championships, and the likes of ESPN News in the States will have on that something happened. That allows them to spell more, because it puts it in front of more eyes, and that's what they're talking about. It's terrible in terms of what people are looking at, right?
But as Davo said, the last thing they were concerned about was the player's welfare, because, you know, I don't care if Christian Eriksen sent a FaceTime and says, look, lads, I'm golden, go out there and play. The trauma and the shock that they went through, and the Finnish players as well, not just the Danish players, the Finnish players are there as well. You know, it was an awful fucking predicament to have to go out and play that game. If we look back, right, we're all Liverpool fans, and I'll lean more to Pete and Phil on this because they're older than me, but if you think back to Heusel, right, and Heusel happens and the game gets played. Now, the atmosphere of the game, you know, it shouldn't have been played. The players all say it now. The game shouldn't have gone ahead because their frame of mind wasn't right. And that's from fighting in the stands, in the crowds. This is a mate of theirs. This is a fella that has 119 caps. And that Danish team, you know, a lot of the Scandinavian teams, we spoke about Sweden earlier, they all come through, and there'll be a lot of them will have played together for years. Like that, it's not like it was Christian Eriksen. We don't know him. They all know him. It's one of their pals. He's one of the main men. And he's lying on the ground, like, fighting for his life.
This goes all the way back to something that Jurgen Klopp said when he was confronted, I think, by that idiot Des Kelly.
Yeah.
And Jurgen Klopp made a very clear point, an 8-minute point, and said, none of you broadcasters are going to care. And you don't care. You only care about having Liverpool on three 12 o'clock kickoffs in a row for your television schedule. None of you will care until something serious happens to one of the players. Now, he obviously didn't mean life or death, but we all knew that when you disrupt the rhythm, and we've all played here, but when you disrupt the rhythm of a player, the body reacts in a different way. Christian Eriksen doesn't understand what happened to him. He does, and now he needs to understand. But I can tell you, you can take a guess. When you disrupt the working rhythm of a professionally tuned athlete, you throw his rhythm and things can happen all over the body. And Jurgen Klopp, Gary Lineker.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Deleted a tweet that he made, a jokey tweet about Jurgen Klopp having a moan about these things. He deleted it last night because he knows. Like a lot of the broadcasters, they know that everything that Jurgen Klopp has said is coming home through, that the broadcasters do not care about the players. They don't care. And they're wearing that chain. And Gary Lineker, in fairness, I don't think he's the worst of them, but he's very, very, he's Mr. Clean. He was Mr. Clean as a player, never took a yellow card, and he doesn't want to be associated with this kind of being wrong. It's now come to bear that a lad almost lost his life, and you can track it all the way back to the insanity of the COVID situation, which was unavoidable, the insanity of the schedule that the players had to go through, and now the insanity of playing in a tournament all over the world, you know, in ridiculous circumstances.
Can I just jump in? Some gimp there says that Eriksen got the vaccine. It was set out today by his agent and his clubs that he didn't get the vaccine. He hasn't had COVID, and there was no underlying medical conditions.
This is nothing to do with the vaccine. Honestly,
and I've gotten the vaccine. I've gotten the vaccine and ran many kilometers since I got it, yeah, and I'm feeling great. In fact, I've never ran faster in my life. So I'd
he actually said Edison got the vaccine. So I don't know who he is, but I hope he's doing well.
Maybe Edison. Edison should get the vaccine. I'll say I'm getting the Indian variant. So vaccines are great. They've been approved for decades. But can I just be on that, because I want to start to move on a wee bit on this topic, because I think it's still relevant in terms of not just what they're talking about, because I think the morally, people are right to question the decision to play on in the match, right? I think it's a fair point. You can see that Kasper Schmeichel wasn't happy about the decision to be put in, to give three variations of what they could do. But the only option here is if UEFA were prepared not to sanction them to have to play on in the match, was to just award it a point each and abandon the game, right? But the rules say that if a game is abandoned and a team refuses to go back out to the pitch, they're forfeiting the game into 3-0 win to the other team, right? So you'd have to go and create a new rule to allow this to happen. Or where do you fit the game in? Because there's only 48 hours between these group games.
UEFA feel are very, very good at creating new rules and rules that suit themselves.
But they open themselves up to a bag of worms, because you'll have then individual FAs taking out lawsuits and preventing and putting injunctions in place to prevent them playing the next round because they breached their own rules internally. And we know that UEFA can't uphold their own rules. Let's think back to the Man City debacle, where they ended up getting overruled on their own rules that they made up. So they can't defend themselves in the court. So they don't want to end up there. So I think it's a strange situation to be in. But the only one that makes sense from a sporting point of view, if both teams had have agreed to just to say, right, in this instance, we both want this to be recorded as a draw. Yeah. Okay, that would have required both teams to come together and UEFA then to accept it and not give them, well, you've got a choice. Play on today, lose, forfeit the game, or play on and then not have the 48 hours. Because clearly the teams wanted to have the 48 hours rest. And I agree with Laura's point that teams in shock aren't the ones making the right decision.
Yeah.
But the same teams aren't going to be able to perform on the pitch. The only real option, and I hate saying this, the only real option to play was, once Christian Eriksen was removed from the pitch, and this sounds really rootless, was to play on the game before the players really found out the shock to set in, the gravity of the situation to set in.
I think that ship had probably already sailed.
It took so long for it to happen, so that was unlikely to go on. So,
but would they, like, I know exactly what you're saying, the three options and the rules, and they would have had to move up with a new rule, but, like, can you imagine, like, I know UEFA are bulletproof to a certain extent, but do you imagine if Denmark said we weren't going back out in UEFA, award of Finland a 3-0 win? I think the fallout would have been absolutely monumental. Yeah.
Well, you know, they would have been exposed for what they actually are.
Yeah, exactly, Pete. Now, listen, I don't. I think it could have been swept under the carpet. Today's news is tomorrow's chip paper and all that. But I think there would have been absolutely uproar if they had forced it or had put that into place, that Finland got a 3-0 win. Because as you said, like, you look at, I think one of the Irish pundits yesterday goes, you can't even analyse the game from a Denmark point of view after what happened. Like, Schmeichel should save the goal. What way is his head at? Højbjerg misses a penalty with an awful penalty. The keeper could have thrown his cap on it. So, like, he says, you can't even analyse the game from a Danish point of view.
Christian Eriksen was supposed to take that penalty.
Mm.
So he's a designated taker, you know.
Exactly. There you go. The flip side of it. So, I mean, look, your UEFA would have had to come up with a rule, and no better, man.
Under the circumstances, you can probably, it's extenuating circumstances. It's not, the rules might say you give a 3-0 win, but this is just outside the norm of the rules. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's. They come up with a fucking solution that works for everyone. Call it a draw, and then Denmark have to make a decision. Can they play on in the tournament or can they not? That's another kind of worms that they're opening up as well. But look.
Well, you imagine being in that changing room, and there could have been a show of hands. But like Richie Sadler said, I think it was Richie Sadler anyway, once 4 or 5 hands go up that they want to play, like, there could be fellas sitting there that might be 4 or 5 that don't want to play over 24 or out of maybe the 16 that are in the squad of the 18 that don't want to play. They'd feel under pressure to kind of say, oh, well, I don't want to be the one to say, listen, I don't fancy you. Or, whatever, which is they shouldn't have to defend how they're feeling about the situation. They don't want to play, they don't want to play.
Shane, I think the bit here for me on that very topic is if three or four hands go up and say they want to play on, that's fine. If you have 11 players who want to play on, that's fine. But the issue is the teams are already selected. You aren't going back to selecting the 11s. So if 15 of the 23-man squad decide that they want to play on and the other eight don't, but those other eight were eight of the 11 that were playing on the pitch, right? You've got an issue because the eight are now being forced to play because the other 15 don't want to force.
Exactly, that's my point. The other 15 would be torn and looking at them, hey, going, listen, lads, it's kind of majority here, can you not? And like, that isn't right. That's just not right.
Phil referenced earlier on the Cameroon-France situation in 2003 when Marc Vivien Foy unfortunately died. France and Cameroon played that game and the lineup, the camera was in everybody's face. And I remember in particular Gregory Coupe, who was the Lyon goalkeeper at the time, had been played with Marc Vivien Foy at Lyon. And Vivien Foy had gone into West Ham. And it was terrible. I mean, it was just a terrible watch. You know, a terrible watch.
I know, but then, Pete, this brings me back to my very original point on this. A precedent was set at that point in time, and yet here we are all these years later, and no protocols, nothing has been built around what happened outside of trying to save the person on the pitch. And I also want to just point out, I know that nobody's going to be watching from Denmark, or nobody's going to be watching from what went on, but the speed of both Simon Kjær, in terms of what he was able to do on the pitch, but also the EMTs and the physios and all to ensure that that Christian Eriksen didn't lose his life, right, should be commended and applauded. And if one thing that this tournament's going to be remembered for is their brilliance in a year that's been dominated by health teams, health services, doctors, nurses, the whole lot, and in such a horrible position, right, that yet again their skills came to the fore. And why we rely on these people so much came to the fore, and why they should be commended. UEFA, there should be a special UEFA recognition for Simon Kjær for saving his life, but also for the teams that were involved in ensuring that he didn't pass on the pitch, because this was phenomenal work. Between, and I know that Shane Downs makes a good point there. Defibs at every sports club in Ireland is the hope that's there. Anthony Taylor, I completely agree, Kev. I said that at the start. Anthony Taylor did an incredible job in recognising the danger that was going on. And I think that's the biggest piece out of this whole bit, is how important reaction times are in significant trauma events, particularly in the sports field, because the quicker you can get to these people, the quicker you have of them successfully being revived and surviving. Because you look at Fabrice Muamba and how quick and how lucky and how fortunate he was that night for the same thing. And this is where you got to ask at the governing body level, what protocols should be enforced across a league-wide and a structure-wide from the grassroots up? There should be defibs in every single playing field available. And if they're communal playing fields, there should be more than one. There should be three, four, because you're always going to have multiple games going on. This should be available to ensure that anyone that wants to get involved in a sport has the best opportunity. God forbid something terrible like this should happen. So on the gravity of that point, I want to just loosen it up a wee bit. I don't want to kill you all in terms of the gravity. I want to just loosen it up a bit. But in terms of a set of pundits, lads, I've never seen a worse bunch of fuckers on the television I've ever seen in my life. Right? I'm going to be honest with you. I had the BBC, I had ITV on, and I will say Ali McCoist and Clyde Tilsley have been the best commentary team I've heard so far. On the RTE side, Richie Sadler is absolutely dominating the game at the moment. He's one of the best pundits out there. He's opinionated. He's intelligent in comparison to like his yang, which is Kenny Cunningham, who is beyond stupid and lacks any intelligence or insight into the game. Chippy Brady is back. Fair play on book. Yeah, it's great to see Chippy back. We got a bit of banter. Ali McCoist as co-commentator is brilliant. My God, that BBC show are Danny possibly Murphy, one of the worst bunch of people ever to express an opinion in a game.
Let me
from
explain.
Shearer to Ferdinand, to Jenis, to Danny Murphy, it's absolute
Let me explain about the BBC, the difference between the BBC and everybody else. I mean, I did a lot of work with the BBC. You have to watch your P's and Q's. It's a public service, basically. You have to really have to watch your P's and Q's. There's no There's no room for controversial opinion. There's no room for any form of it. It's completely run by the government. So any of our British subscribers who are in the chat now will back me up on this. It's a complete government-run corporation. That's why you pay a license, a subscription. I mean, RTE is a chasm of freedom in comparison to it, despite being similarly run. However, the BBC is very, very strict. It's now kind of, if you like, diverse by policy. So you'll have a certain amount of, a lot of mainstream white presenters have been, if you notice, have been replaced rather cynically by black women who understand the game or have played the game, or it's very much a paint by numbers situation. There's nothing organic about the BBC. So that doesn't get away from the fact that Alan Shearer is absolutely boring, that Gary Lineker is the poster boy for safety. So he would have been instructed to go through his tweets and remove certain tweets yesterday. I'm just telling you why. You know, other stations are maverick when compared to the BBC. I've been there, I've worked with them, and you have to watch your P's and Q's.
Shane, you brought this topic up. How much would you like to see Channel 4 being given a tournament? Because their one shot of football produced Gazzetta Football Italia and Italian Football, right? Which is arguably the best coverage of football we've ever seen in the English speaking world in the last 50 years, right? So just throwing this one out. Who do we think that Channel 4 should be given a shot at its world?
Yeah, but I do. But can you imagine an RT version like Channel 4 and you had like Darren Maloney sitting in Smithfield Market with the boys going boy forward and things, and I'm going, yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. Right. Or down in Summerhill or whatever, you know what I mean? It'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
Channel 4, absolutely. Jeez, that Gazzetta was there. James Richardson and the Piazzas in Milan and everything like that, having a cappuccino, reading the Pink Gazzetta. Yeah. Absolutely manic. But just touching on RT, I don't know if I watched the Netherlands game on RT last night, and your man was referring to the Johan Cruyff Arena as the Yardie Cruyff Arena.
I had to check that. I'm like, where's this game being played?
I was like, oh my God, how do you get that wrong? It's like
that was George Hamilton, was it?
It was your man, Stephen Alkin, I think. How do you make that mistake? And it blew up a bit, in fairness. I've seen a bit on Twitter, a few Dion Fanning and a few tweeting about it, having a laugh, not having a pop, it was having a laugh about it. But Euro trash at half time. Oh, my God. You imagine Lolo Ferrari.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Okay, I was going to say, God bless, God rest our soul.
Look, I think Channel 4 will be the best show to broadcast the tournament. And the lads keep popping up the thing. They've done Formula 1, right? So their Formula 1 coverage has been brilliant. The NFL coverage used to be absolutely top-notch on Channel 4. Anytime Channel 4 has covered a sport, they've nailed it. They've absolutely nailed it.
They've done a bit of NBA, I think, didn't they, before in the past as well, did they?
I don't know. They may have done. I always watch it on Sky, but yeah, they could have done. But like that, it is that their sports shows are always top notch. But even if you watch, it's the main men on the BBC are absolute gash. If you watch like the AFCON coverage and things like that, it's a lot better because they don't wheel out Gary Lineker and fucking Jermaine Genius and all these guys, Mark Bright or Efan Ikoku or something like that. Mm. And it's different voices that have an interest and a bit of a passion for what they're watching, rather than Danny Murphy. Like, Danny Murphy sounds like he fucking hates football. I don't know what
Danny Murphy hates football more than Mark Lawrenson, which is actually going somewhere because
Mark Lawrenson, Phil. Laurel.
Sorry, Laurel.
There's a difference between Mark Lawrenson and Laurel.
Okay, so Laurel. But like, to be fair, Laurel would feel like a breath of fresh air and somebody who adores the game and is a great analyst when you put him alongside Genis and Alan Shearer and Danny Murphy. My God, Danny Murphy is horrific. Horrific.
Phil, Genis and Jamie Redknapp are the two worst pundits for analysing a game and going through and their takes. They are just, they're the two worst
boys. For two midfield players, you'd expect them to have a good understanding of the game, wouldn't you? Like, and they're absolute dirt. And the two that get touted for, you know, presenting shows and all that, isn't Genis getting touted
match of the day?
Genis does the one show that even on BBC.
Yeah.
I tell you, I think I've got everyone on board with the Channel 4. We'd have the big breakfast followed by Crystal Maze, and then we'd lead into the coverage of the European Championships. We'd have James Richardson presenting. We just have to think up with some really good commentary. Get Paolo Di Canio in. He'd have to be a decent analyst, right, in terms of for a bit of Italian insight. And Gianluca Vialli, because Vialli and Richardson were great mates.
Yeah.
You get Gazza in just to do some stuff around England and what it's like to be an England player. Listen, I'm telling you.
But you'd get, in all seriousness, like if you listen to Galazzo, the podcast with James Richardson.
Oh, brilliant. And
it's the best thing out there, apart from the
He's the best in the business, really, yeah. Apart from Grizz.
He's a good journalist.
After Grizz Khan. But him, Mark Hottie, James Horncastle, like their quality. And if they were fronting a football show, they'd had on
they were, and I was gutted when that BT. Went, Keith. Yeah, the European, that European night, where it was like soccer Saturday, but when a goal went in, they showed the goal, and then they had
the red zone. It was the attempt at red zone. Yeah,
it was absolutely fantastic, and they had their own spin-off show, as in like they'd be on one week doing the highlights and stuff like that. The leagues, it was so good. I don't know why BT
football is TV broadcasters are missing a beat. I don't know why the show that they're putting out now compared to what they could be doing.
Yeah,
playing it safe. Keith.
Last topic was, I said I'd give it out to the people, and I just got a few shouts from earlier on, and I thought some interesting shouts. So Adrian got a new contract today from Liverpool Football Club. We may as well have a Liverpool spin towards the end. It had an immense amount of social media backlash and various different things. So lads, given it's the first time he's ever had a contract extended by any club he's ever been at.
Hilarious.
Are you happy or sad? But can I just let everyone know in the chat, just to put it on record, Grizz is done with Liverpool Football Club if Adrian is named Liverpool's number two goalkeeper.
He's not going to be, he is
because Kelleher's going alone, but anyway, so Adrian is going to be number two, so just letting everyone know, when that happens, Grizz is finished with Liverpool. So if you see him, you need to report him on Twitter for lying. Okay, so just
send him name.
Okay, so that's just what we're going to do, because he's done.
Poor Grizz.
But Shane, Grizz. As a fellow goalkeeper, were you delighted to see Adrian get a new contract today?
No, I wasn't delighted, but I didn't have a meltdown either. I thought it was just probably a clever piece of business by the club to keep someone there that knows the ropes, that knows the club, that's very popular in around the place. Because essentially, I know you think, I don't know whether you're jesting or whatever, I know whether you think Kelleher is going on loan. I don't think Kelleher is going on loan. I think he's going to be second choice. I think the real problem with Adrian is the most durable over three goalkeepers. Yeah. That really is the worry, because he's That could be a situation where he gets game time. I actually think, with obviously Alisson is number one, and was delighted he came back into a good bit of form at the back end of the season, which was great after the personal year he had. But I think second choice goalkeeper at Liverpool is actually a very, very good gig, because. Yeah. You're going to get games. You're going to get minutes. You're going to get games because he picks up injuries. He picks up knocks. So I would be extremely disappointed if Kelleher goes on loan and Adrian becomes number two. But as James Pearce and a few were reporting, he will be number three, and he's kept in the background just for the Lucas Leiva crack. Remember Lucas used to stay, you told Jamie home, Lucas used to stay around the place just for... because he was good in the dressing room, Phil. Jamie used to tell you that. I think this is the Adrian Lucas Leiva.
My response is that's grand if he's just hanging around the training room and being great, but as soon as you have to rely on him, you end up eighth in the league.
Exactly. Eight. Same with Adrian.
Where do you fit on the Adrian?
On the outside, looking at it, and he's a tour choice keeper. You're not going to get many tour choice keepers. If you are, people say, oh, other teams wouldn't do this. But Man City are wheeling out Scott Carson, and Spurs had Joe Hart. You know what I mean? And these are all pony as well, if we're honest about it. Mm. If Joe Hart, he's beyond bad, that fella, for fuck's sake. He's the English Adrian.
Sorry if I cutting across you, Keith.
He's poxy. He's absolutely poxy. He's one of the worst shites to ever pick a jersey up and play in goal. Sorry, go on.
All them... number threes that you're listening would be on a hell of a lot more though than Adrian is on, I'd say. So sorry, Keith, sorry.
No, you're right. It's a good point as well. But if he's the number three, Davil nailed it there. The number two keeper is going to get games at Liverpool. Number three has a good chance of getting them as well. And that's the worry, you know what I mean? Like, the unless Alisson can sort out, and I don't know, look, I'm not having a dig at Alisson. He lost his father, very tragic, but I don't think he was great before that, if I'm being honest. Does anyone have an issue with his size? And coming from a slim man like me, you know, we can say these things. But there's all these sort of pictures went up about him, and I'm like, that's ridiculous, that's ridiculous. Is he not fit? Is his conditioning an issue? Because he's picking up silly little injuries. Is it down to conditioning? And used to our goalkeepers, right? What do you think of that?
Who, Alisson or Adrian?
Alisson.
The lads are back knocking in for him. They found Morata's girl in the boots. the Alisson thing interests me because I don't know if he is, because of that injury where his calf more or less just exploded and he had to come back. Do you get a load of different
knock on
injuries that can particularly go, particularly where your season's been condensed and you've had to go and play internationals and you haven't had a long rest? I mean, what he is, we're into the same situation again. He's off with Brazil and he's playing the Copa America. That's my worry. It's more so, do we need more rest for that squad? Like, you look at Gomez, you look at Van Dijk all getting the rest this season. You look at Salah and Mane all being rested as well. Henderson is going to get a nice rest because who cares? Trent, thankfully, is getting a decent rest as well. Robbo will get a decent rest as well after these group stages because he won't be going much further than that.
You never know. Three teams get out. He might do.
No, he won't. They're Scotland. They won't win anything. They won't even win the toss. That's what's going on there at the moment.
Cable toss.
Yeah, to be better off just drinking a load of iron brew and eating Bart and Mars bars that they have a bit of crack. I think with Alisson, it's very much been a case of, I think he needed a proper rest. We forced him back because of who he is. And there is the mental thing. But my God, that's what we're talking about. Alisson, if you look at the back from when he comes back in December, he doesn't miss a game from that point on. Mm. He struggles through a bad patch of form after his father passed and whatever. And then that run in of 10 games, he was back to the Alisson and old, making huge big saves and scoring goals for us. So I think there's more of a chance of him getting a full season out of him next season and him only missing out on games where they choose to rest him, be it the League Cup and the FA Cup where they're not interested in, right?
Is the Adrian risk then? If we've a fully fit Alisson, am I just bringing in Kelleher for select games that we're picking? Well, then that makes the Adrian thing, for his experience and his know-how, fair enough. And that was
the only thing is, Keith, and this is where I go back to Adrian as number two, and I think Kelleher may go out, is likely to go out on loan, is I think Klopp will have Kelleher on the bench less, because he knows he can plug and play Adrian in a game if anything happens to Alisson, because he's more likely to go for experience in an injury event in a match than where he's able to talk to Kelleher before the games, who still
prep
has a limited
and prep him through
and get him into the situations where he needs to be in terms of the focus and the video training and all that type of stuff before a game goes on. And I think really from Kelleher's growth, though, I think Kelleher needs to get out and get a bit like what happened with Henderson at United. If they see Kelleher with a long-term future at the club and they're saying he is good enough to take over from Alisson, and we know what goalkeepers spend an awful lot of time with football clubs, so there's no real rush to do it, then in reality, I'm looking at it saying, okay, is there a drive to get him out, to get him maybe a season on loan, to get him up to a full start and status to challenge Alisson? Or is Alisson looking at that will be year 5 or 6 of his contract? Is he then thinking, is there an opportunity for me in Real Madrid? Is there an opportunity to be somewhere else? Like, they're talking about De Gea going to Paris Saint-Germain for €1 billion a week. And that means that somebody like, what's your man's name? Brilliant goalkeeper, Keylor Navas. Is available then to move on around the continent. So I don't know. I just think when we look at it, people losing their shit over Adrian signing a contract extension. If that turns out that we've spent all our money on signing Adrian to a contract extension, rightfully have lose your shit over it, right? If it's about signing a goalkeeper to improve your squad depth, shut the fuck up, because you've been moaning about squad depth more or less now for the best part of 4 months.
Well, there's a point there, Phil, someone saying if Kelleher does go out on loan, probably a goalkeeper would come in, and I'd probably agree with that. Another keeper would come in. I don't see them going with Adrian as number two, and then the young Brazilian kid as third choice. He's nowhere near ready at all.
You've all skipped over the fella that was sent out on loan and is highly. Yeah, he was sent on to a full loan and Kelleher took his place. I think we'll see the reverse. I think Grabber will come back into the squad as an option, as one of the three, and Kelleher will be given a full loan spell this season.
You could be right. I could see Grabara being sold now myself. He's probably he had a good season. Actually, he saved a penalty that got them promoted or won a cup or something like that. I think he was Aarhus in Denmark. Yeah. I could be wrong now.
In the middle of our street.
I think his
stock is probably at the highest. Maybe it will be for selling. Grabara in the summer. That's all I was going to say.
I think you got to look at a lot of things with goalkeepers. I think it's very clever piece of business today with Adrian. I mean, I think Alisson is at the stage, and certainly after the year he's had, right, you want him to feel stable. You know, you must remember we're dealing with human beings here. I wouldn't personally like to see the club going out and buying somebody who could threaten him. And you know, Shane and Phil, you know more than anyone else how goalkeepers train. They train as a mini team within a team. So for me, it's all about having goalkeepers who accept their roles at the club. So Adrian seems to be very, very good at, you know, he's a good presence around the place. By all accounts, he's a very good professional and he can do a job. But psychologically, Alisson will know that he's no threat to him, and he will also know that Quevin Kelleher is absolutely no threat to him, certainly at this point in time.
Stop. Did you just fucking say Quevin Kelleher? I'll come over to Barcelona and I'll stick it in the back of one of those ambulances and drive
If you ever say
Kelleher again, right?
I said Kelleher, I swear to you. It's this bloody thing. But he's
all full on English. I swear. Seriously. Yeah. I'll get the next bow.
But he'll know that there's no threats there. So I think it's a move for stability.
Really. Yeah. So if you remember, right, we brought in Adrian because we got rid of Mignolet, and Alisson gets injured against Norwich first game of the season, and Adrian comes on. And the fact that he's not Mignolet means the crowd didn't get on his back from the off. And he went and done well. Went and done well, right? Because he was a Mignolet. Yeah.
I don't want to break your thing, but look, I'm going to surprise Pete. So listen, I just want to thank everyone for listening tonight, right? It was the best thing. And thanks for the topics. Thanks for the interaction of the chats. We've loads of stuff coming up. Get on the Siena steps. And again, thanks for everything, except for Ben Davies, because he's a Muppet. Cheers for all that. This has been The Forum. I've been your host, Phil Casey. That's been Pete Smith. That's been Keith over this side, and then down the bottom here is my old pal Shane for getting on. Good night, God bless. See you next week. Sports Social Podcast Network.